Welcome to a World of Good podcast. I'm Nate Tapman.
And I'm Andrew Gale.
And we are two friends
who love Jesus,
care about the church,
and travel the world to share stories of people who do the same.
Our conversations happen in all kinds of places,
like a coffee shop in an airport terminal,
or even the back of a crowded taxi.
But no matter where we go, from Argentina to Zimbabwe,
we capture stories of the good God is doing around the world.
And we hope those stories will do you a world of good. I'm so excited to be sitting across the desk from Pastor Donnie in Honduras. This is my first podcast recording actually outside the U.S. in a long time. And I told Pastor Donnie I almost forgot to bring my recording stuff because it's been so long since I've traveled. And now when this is actually airs, it may be a long time from now. But it's so fun to get to sit across an actual desk rather than a screen and have a conversation with someone, because so much of what we've been doing has been virtual, you know, this last year. And I know it is for you. We actually just walked through the school that you guys have across the street and saw a number of teachers, but no students. And you were explaining that's because everything's virtual.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks for having me, Andrew. And yeah, it is definitely a different time. kids have been out of school now from more than a year.
Wow.
Since March last year, 2020, they've been out of school and receiving their classes at home, which presents challenges on both sides, from teachers and the kids, the students' side, especially in our context, given the limitations we have in terms of connectivity, internet, and other stuff. But, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. So
they were teaching. I heard little kids' voices. I mean, they were making it happen, even though it's not ideal.
Yeah, certainly.
Awesome. Well, Pastor Donnie, I'm grateful. This is my second time to be with the church in Honduras, second visit, and both of them were so fantastic. You know, last time getting to be with the church, spending time with you and with the ministry here, and then this time we got to spend more time learning about the entrepreneurial school, which is just a phenomenal, phenomenal ministry and way to connect people into opportunities to support themselves, their family, the community through business. And I love that you connect that into the spiritual life as well, that it's about how we live as Christians and the integrity we bring to every moment. And so that's really been really neat to see. So as we get started, tell, for those listening who may not know you, now they know your name, tell us where you grew up. Tell us about yourself. Give us some context.
Okay. So I am a native Honduran, and I'm sure your listeners could tell by my accent. But I got my English from growing up on the island of Roatan, which was originally, even before my time, a British colony.
Yeah.
So my English came from growing up there. Later on, I received a call to ministry and went abroad to do some studies, seminary in Mexico, and came back and got involved in ministry.
Yeah.
And that have been my story since.
Yeah. And you, when you were in Mexico, you were in Saltillo at La Buena Tierra?
Yes, Saltillo, La Buena Tierra.
See, I love that place. It's a place that's very dear. My wife and I met there. I think I probably told you that before. We met there. And so anytime somebody talks about that place, I have very fond memories. I didn't go to school there, so I can't speak to the schooling that you experienced, but it's a great place. It's so different. Being there a couple of years ago, man, it looks very different.
Things have changed quite a bit, yeah.
So you grew up in the church. I grew up in the church.
My parents were pastors. My dad since then has passed away, but my mother is still involved in ministry. She pastors a church in Miami, Florida.
Oh, cool.
She still is at 83 years old.
Wow. Yeah. That's awesome. Still pastoring a
church.
Amazing. That's so cool. So you've been a pastor for a number of years here in Honduras. When you came back from Saltillo, did you then come to La Ceiba, or where did you first?
Well, I originally went back to Roatan for a little while, just maybe a couple of years. And my brother actually was working here in La Ceiba.
Okay.
And then I moved over to work with him.
Yeah.
Eventually, he moved to live to the States. And then and I remained as the pastor here.
Awesome.
And the ministry kicked off from there.
Yeah. So how many years ago was that you started the ministry here, or that you started working here in La Ceiba?
That's roughly 32 years.
Okay. Wow.
Back.
That's wow. awesome. And for those that don't know, Roatan is like this tiny island just off the shore. And there's a couple ways, like we're going to fly to Roatan today. And it's a very arduous, long 15-minute flight. But you can also take a ferry back and forth. So there's a couple ways to kind of get there. But it's not connected. I mean, it is its own separate little island, its own little world.
Yes, that's a good way to put it, a separate world.
Yeah.
And the culture is different. The way of thinking tend to be a lot different.
Was that difficult transitioning from like Roatan, that world, to then coming to La Ceiba? And being, because it really is a different cultural context. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I was in Roatan, the first time I went there, I came expecting to have to speak Spanish, mm-hmm. and you don't. Like there isn't, like you don't have to speak Spanish. You can get around just fine, which just, it was so bizarre. It did not feel like I was in Latin America.
Yeah. I think one of the most significant differences bringing up, maybe what I mean to say here is the islands has like the Protestant mindset, while the mainland has like a Catholic mindset.
Interesting.
So Catholicism was what really impacted the mainland, while Protestantism was what impacted the island. So from there is where the several differences emerge.
But it's
interesting. And it had been really good for me to blend both things. It have been a very enriching experience, I should say. And that get me to thinking about other stuff, you know, that variety brings progress to a certain extent. You know, you get to understand life so much better given the amount of factors that could be in the equation, right? Yeah. So
that'll be interesting. No, I think that's exactly the argument for the value of diversity, right? Mm-hmm, yeah. The value of diversity is that if everyone looks and thinks and sounds and talks like me, then we're missing a whole subset of people that think differently, that, you know, all of my culture isn't good and all of other cultures aren't good. But if we can bring the good from each of our cultures together, we create something that's really beautiful. I think that's awesome.
That's definitely true. And our challenge, of course, is how to make that happen.
Yeah, right.
but yeah.
No, that's exactly. It's easier said than done. It's one thing to say. It's another thing to figure that out.
Yeah.
So when you came to La Ceiba, I mean, in essence, you were somewhat like a missionary. You were crossing cultures out of one culture into another. I mean, not a full culture, but I mean, it's a great example of, in the United States, we have those kinds of things as well, where you're in the same country, but there are very distinct ways of thinking about the world and doing ministry. Did you find that transition difficult, or did it feel really natural to come and work in La Ceiba?
It presented its challenges, and that I was raised up speaking island English, what I'm doing here now. But, and of course, the mainland was only Spanish.
Yeah.
So I kind of.
So did you know Spanish before you came to La Ceiba?
Yes, I did. I did not know Spanish before I went to Mexico.
Oh, wow. That
was really a challenge.
You went to Saltillo to do your seminary in Spanish.
In Spanish. And I mean, I knew words in Spanish, but I couldn't really, I wasn't fluent in it, I should say. And so.
That's a huge jump.
That was challenging. But yeah, from Roatan to here, I still had some challenges in terms of thinking and working all in Spanish.
But Mexico sounds like it was a good transition point.
Certainly was. And talking about culture, that's another culture altogether that also helped to enrich my own personal experience in life. So I'm happy for all the stuff that God have placed in my path to form me, you know, make me a better person.
I think you just said something that you said it very offhandedly, but I think it's important for people in the States. This is something that we think about, but we don't realize that when you went to Mexico, it was a different culture. Like so often in the United States, we tend to lump people that speak Spanish in one context. Like these are Spanish speaking, these are Latinos, but Hondurans are not the same as Mexicans. There are significant differences in the way you think.
Certainly.
Like, and probably even, there's probably even, prejudice is a strong word, but certainly bias. Like you think something about a Mexican will think something about a Honduran, right? I mean, that you have to cross that barrier to go and go and study there. So that would be very, a unique experience as an English-speaking islander, mm-hmm. going to a Spanish-speaking place and bringing all of that with you. That would be a lot of filters to think about that new experience.
Yeah. I agree. I certainly appreciated the fact that, you know, the teachers in our Bible school give their very best to teach us. But I always tell people, my greatest lesson was the experience itself, not so much the lessons that I received in a classroom, but just the experience of experiencing people in a different culture, in different settings, and learning from them. And I think that is the greatest lessons that we can learn as the experiences we have. You know, I know in my context, in my school settings, so forth and so on, we put so much emphasis on learning the lessons, the textbook,
the knowledge,
whatever. And we do not give experience the place that it deserves, as I see it, of course. And what you were saying about generalizing, I see that so often where we tend to put people in boxes.
Yeah.
And that's so wrong.
Yeah.
But we only get to discover that when we go into other settings and experience life from a different perspective or place.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're right. That's an incredible challenge, but very, very enriching.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in a lot of ways, it sounds like that experience on Saltillo was a missionary training. I mean, it was for you, it was learning culture and learning about yourself and learning about the culture you were going to be experiencing. Even though it was different than Honduras, it was bringing you into that Latin culture, which you had experienced some, but certainly being immersed in it in a really probably challenging, overwhelming way. That's really cool. Yeah. And then you came to La Ceiba and you started, or you came back to Roatan, but then went to La Ceiba and started the ministry here and have been here for 32 years.
Yes.
So tell us about the churches here. You have churches in a number of places on kind of the northern shore of Honduras.
Yeah. We started out, when I came here, there were like 12 people that my brother was working with, and most of them were young kids who are now our leaders.
Yeah.
But yeah, we started out here, and since then God have blessed us to start churches in 8 different locations in Honduras. And most of our pastors are kids that started with us and now they're doing their own thing per se. And it have been very exciting to see our work multiplied in the lives of other people.
I appreciate it. We were talking about some of this yesterday, but you mentioned, and I'll just bring it up here and you can say more if you want to, but you mentioned that, you know, the planting of new churches, the connection of new churches was done both kind of organically as well as strategically. So, you know, there would be a pastor that would move back to a city and would start a church because he has connections and family there.
Exactly.
But there was also strategic to say, hey, this is a really important city in our area. We should consider trying to connect a church in there. And so I think that's really, sometimes we lean on one or the other, but I love that you guys are trying to incorporate both of those, recognizing the opportunities that are there, but also not just waiting for those opportunities, but strategically thinking about, well, where should we be pushing into as well?
Yeah, and I something that I did not mention yesterday, but it's key, and it's the leading of the Holy Spirit.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
You decide which one you will use, organic or strategic. You decide, you let the Spirit decide in that case. Sometimes he leads to follow somebody who say, come and let's do something here. Sometimes he say, just strategically think about a different place.
Yeah.
It's all about following the Spirit, you know, not a boxed in, this is the way we do it, but just wherever the Spirit leads us. That's kind of the way we try to.
In our conversation
operate.
The last few days, you know, it's following of the Spirit, not just what the Spirit's telling you, but you've been really pushing this last year to listen to everyone in the congregation. And how do those that we may pushed to the periphery or think that aren't connected, actually listening to their stories and exactly. What's the Spirit telling them?
What God is saying in general, not only individually, you know, because God speaks to us individually, because of course we do have an individual responsibility and task, but He also speaks to us collectively.
Yeah.
So if we're going to do something that involves others, then they should be involved from the very beginning of that project. You know, we should hear what God is saying to the church, what the Spirit is saying to the church, not only to a person in the church or an elite group within the church.
To me, that's that great marriage of organic and strategic. Mm-hmm. You know, you can be strategic, but if it's not connected to, you know, the move of the Spirit, you know, and the move of the Spirit within the entire church, then all the strategy goes out the window if it's not connected to that.
Of course.
So one of the things that I love about the church in Honduras is to see the different ways that you guys are connecting into your community. You do that through, and we talked about the entrepreneurial school. You have an actual school, an elementary, middle school, high school. You have counseling programs. I mean, the kinds of ministry you do flows out of what the needs of the community are, but they're vast. I mean, it goes from all kinds, it touches every aspect of someone's life. Can you give us like just a big picture view of what some of the things are that happen at this church that support and connect in with the broader community?
Yeah, so we have as a mission statement, or we hold as a mission statement, three pillars or columns, whatever you would want to call it, but three main things. And one is to form Christians in the character of Christ. That's basically what we say. And then we want to be productive, and then we want to be of influence. So it's formation, production, and influence. Those are the things we stress. So the influence part is service. Yeah. We influence others by serving them. Mm-hmm. And we realize that if we're in a community, we should be influenced in the community. And the only way to influence the community is serving the community. So that's where the ideas and the leading to start a school, start a counseling center. We do what we call the Earth Belongs to the Lord, which is cleaning. We do cleaning the streets and picking up garbage and whatever. And, you know, we have a program, Children of Promise, which is from Anderson, but we're doing it here. Beside the fact of, you know, serving cancer, we serve kids with cancer. We have a program with them, and also the City Hospital.
Wow.
We also have a connection with them. So along with a bunch of different things, but these are the things that we're really zeroing in on. But again, they all grew out of that heart to serve, believing that as we serve the community, we become influential in the community and become a vital part of the community. And if I could just maybe add something to that, is what I sensed the Lord led me to think, and it could be different. I at one time felt this idea that the church should become just as vital to the community as the electrical company or the water company. You know, and conversation in my mind was, if we did not have electricity today, who would miss it? Mm. And the idea is everybody would. And it would probably be a news on the radios and television and on the written newspaper and so forth and so on. So I say, you know, we should be doing things that the day we do not do it, the whole city begin to wonder what's happening.
Yeah.
What's happening. So that thought came to me before we had the school. Mm. And that triggered the school. At that time, I asked the congregation, you know, if we didn't exist tomorrow, would La Ceiba, which is the city we're living in, would La Ceiba miss us? Mm. And it was like, well, probably not. We're not doing
not much, the response you
we're
want.
Not doing much more than just singing and clapping. So so I asked that question like 2 years back after we began doing all these stuff we're doing. And everybody's like, man, it'll be a catastrophe if we cease to exist in La Ceiba because we're touching so many areas in La Ceiba. Right now, if IDHC, which is what we call our church, if we close, you know, how many parents would be wondering, you know, where I'm going to put my kid now? How many parents would be wondering, how am I going to feed my kid? Yeah. You know, how am I going to take care? So many people who have been helped by the counseling ministry, and I'm not talking about church people, I'm talking about citizens, you know? They'll be wondering, you know, how am I going to deal with my problems, or where am I going to take my troubled kid, you know, anymore, and so forth and so on. As I already made that point, right? But what I'm saying is why we're serving, the heart behind why we're serving, and how it's impacting our city.
And the counseling, the school, all of those aren't free things to the community, but they're incredibly reduced costs. Like if they were going to go to another they would be paying a lot more to go see another counselor. So it's, there's still buy-in from the community, but you've made it accessible to a different group of people that may not have had the funds to send their kid to a private school. You know, they may have wanted to do that, but they didn't have the ability to do that until you guys said, okay, we want to help make that possible.
That's the whole point. Yeah, that's the whole point. We want to serve. We're serving. So we're not for profit in any of the things we do. Matter of fact, we invest in these things and we try to make them as accessible as possible to everybody.
That's so cool. So cool. And I think about like even your entrepreneurial school has all kinds of different businesses that support the community. And again, I know those bring funds, but like there's a place called Heladito that's down the road that does ice cream and juices and churros, which I ate yesterday, which I'll probably be dreaming about for at least the next couple of weeks. They were delicious. But the funds that come from that then help support the entrepreneurial school.
Exactly.
You know, and there's this kind of reciprocal nature of that. It's supporting the community because you talk about not having electricity. And if I didn't have electricity at my house, it would be sad. But man, if you didn't have electricity here with as hot as it is and the humidity, like it would be missed, you know, direly. And so, you know, you're providing these kinds of places like Heladito, a place you can get a nice cold ice cream, you know, but then also then supports the work that's happening. It's a really neat way of making yourself a vital part of the community where you would be missed if you weren't there.
Exactly.
I think about the dance point. School. Mm-hmm. We have a dance school that teaches kids dance, but then also gets used at the church. You know,
exactly.
On Sunday, we got to see some of the dancing. It's just so cool.
Yeah. You know? And in that case, it opens space for troubled young girls to come and find not only a recreational way to deal with their problem, but they also find godly counsel.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've seen countless young girls come to know Jesus Christ through that ministry.
That's incredible. Yeah, every time I'm here, I see something else or get connected to something else, and I'm like, oh, I had no idea you guys were doing that. Like, and I think that's one of the things that's obvious about the ministry that you guys that happens here is that you are pushing people in the church to take ownership of their faith and how that faith gets lived out in the community. Because there's no way that Pastor Donnie could do all of the things that you guys are doing. Like, there's no possible way. But you've been a part of a church that has raised up leaders and then pushed those leaders out to go and do and given them the freedom to excel and probably to fail, but also to excel and find how to succeed the next time. And I just think that's really, really encouraging.
Certainly.
Well, I've talked about all the things I love about the church in Honduras. Do you guys face any challenges? What are challenges that you're facing right now?
Well, beside pandemic.
I know. We're still in the midst of the pandemic as we have this conversation.
I always think that the biggest challenge is mindset. You know, changing mindset, or I shouldn't say that because I cannot change mindset, but you know, how to interact and how to effectively work with people who thinks differently on certain subjects. Like, obviously, we're here trying to present the gospel, which is a transformation of our thinking.
Yeah.
And that's so challenging, you know, to how do you really affect people in a way that you can, you know, have them see the need to change their way of thinking.
Yeah.
I kind of understand traditional Christianity as more focused on action than thoughts. And in my world, I tend to think thoughts are more important than actions. Not that actions are not important, but what comes first and what is more important. So that's what I find challenging. How do I get into the mind of people more effectively?
Yeah. And so much of that is shaped at a very young age. It's shaped, you know, so early on, and it becomes difficult to make those, to make mental shifts, you know, if we're convinced that we're not worth anything at a young age. How you move up past that and start to believe that, no, I do have worth, and that there is worth in Christ. And then, because then that affects every other aspect of my life. If I think that I'm worthless, I can't, why would I be able to keep a job? I'm worthless. Why would I be able to, I mean, there are all these other things then fall away because we believe that. And that shift is set so early, it's difficult to make that. But you guys are working with kids, giving yourself some opportunity to speak those truths in at a young age.
And that's the purpose why we choose a school and to work with kids in different areas, because it's somewhat easier to get into the minds of kids than it is to get into the mind of an adult who's already formed, right?
Yeah.
And I continue to discover new things and new ways to work in that direction. One of the things is, as we've talked, you know, that it's just all over my mind, all over my everything I do, is, you know, getting people at the table, having people express themselves unashamedly where they're at. You know, this is who I am, this is where I'm at, this is my level, and deal with me here.
Yeah.
You know, and a challenge of dealing with people where they're at.
Yeah.
I think that is a key piece to this great challenge of helping people from their thought life, from that the takes, inside out, per se.
Yeah, absolutely. And it takes an incredible amount of grace.
Definitely.
Because you have to be able to be willing to not expect someone to be where you want them to be, but to be willing for them to be where they are.
Exactly.
And to love them and care for them in that space.
Exactly.
Which also means you have to know people. You have to really get to know them.
It's a process. It's an incredible process. It's definitely worth it.
Yeah.
You know, if you can help one person, you know, in all your life, hopefully it'd be a thousand, but if you can help one person get beyond a harmful way of thinking, you've done a great job.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah.
Well, one issue that, you know, is happening in the United States and is a point of conversation in churches as they wrestle with what it means to be a Christian in the midst of our cultural context in the United States is immigration. You know, we read in the Bible, you know, that God has a heart for the immigrant, but it's challenging for churches to know, what does that look like? How do we love and support people that are coming to our country, and how do we do that? And one of the things I want to talk to you about, again, I know that you're not an expert. We always say this on the podcast. We know that you're not an expert, and you're not speaking on behalf of all Latin Americans, you know, but I wanted to hear from a local context, you know. What does immigration look like for you and for the church here in Honduras? Is that something that you guys deal with? Is it something that you think about? Like, is that something that people have conversations with you about? What does it actually look like for you as a pastor, pastoring people here in Honduras, in terms of, you know, the push and pull factor with the United States and immigration?
We cannot not see it. It's there because, you know, we have what we call the caravans. That leaves practically every month, you know, thousands of people leaving. And so definitely it's a very frequent conversation in our mids. Like you say, it's so vast. I mean, there's just so many things to consider.
Yeah.
There are so many different factors. Personally, I say that very, very emphatically, you know, personally, as a pastor, I try to discourage, you know, illegal immigration. And I personally do not believe it is the best way to go about solving a problem. But having said that, I'm conscious that there are some tough situations.
Yeah.
You know, people are going through some tough stuff. You know, that I, as a pastor, visit homes sometimes and I wonder how in the world are they surviving? How can they even live like that? It's a kind of life that cannot be called life. So I try to put myself in their position. And when I hear, you know, they left in a caravan to, you know, to cross the border, then I'm like, you know, I don't really agree with it as a pastor, but I can understand why they're doing it. So, and I think that's kind of, that's personally my way of seeing it. But I think a lot of people see it that way. I believe a lot of people do, I mean, they go on that journey not wanting to do it in a sense of saying that this is what I really want for my life, but as saying this is my only option.
They feel a helplessness.
A helplessness, yeah. And when people are hungry, I mean, you can tell them, you can give them all the best arguments in the world. They'll go where they feel like they can be filled, even if that represents a threat of dying, you know. And so when I hear people, because you hear all kinds of stories, many people cross and they get to what they consider the promised land, but others return without an arm or without a foot or something like that, you know, and it just helps me to understand how desperate people really are, that they're willing to risk losing a member of their body or even their lives. You know, people leave with their kids. And you think, man, how desperate could they be to do that? So I realize that there is some really deep need pushing and driving the normality. So I kind of mix emotions, you know, like, well, I do not encourage it. I always try to discourage it. But when it happened, I'm sympathetic in a sense of saying, well, yeah, I understand. And I just pray things would go well for them.
And do you think that those, I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it. Do you think that those people that are making the decision to try to cross and get to the United States, have they heard those stories of how difficult it's going to be?
Oh, yeah.
It's not a surprise to them.
It's not a surprise to them. That's what I say. That's how desperate they are. Yeah. It's not like how evil they are. It's how desperate could you be that knowing your daughter has 85% chances of being raped before before they cross the border, yet still do it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a level of desperation that I cannot even relate to it.
Yeah,
and of course, I'm not in their situation.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, there are people who take advantage of the situation. Not everybody is in that desperate. Some people just want to, you know, take advantage of the situation. And you got evil people in the group. And there's all kind of people in the group, like everything else. But the people who are risking everything, they're usually desperate and see that as their only option.
Yeah. And if they're heading to the border. I mean, I would assume that like food insecurity is a part of that. But I know I was able to spend some time with some of our Church of God churches that are right there at the border that you know, when there was some long lines of people waiting to try to get in as asylum seekers, they would actually go and pick them up and bring them back to their church so they could wash their clothes and take a shower and have a free meal. And the stories that we heard, you know, were both in terms of like, there's no food where I am, but also in terms of like violence, you know, that gangs are a major part of the city that we're in and we don't feel safe there. What are some of the factors here in Honduras, you know, that push? Is it primarily the food insecurity, or are there other factors that cause people to ask to make that desperate decision to go?
Well, Honduras is a very poor country, and just a large percentage of our people live far below the poverty line.
Yeah.
So that in itself, then it's a corrupt country. Mm-hmm. And I hate to be saying this because it's my country I'm talking about, but that is a reality. And then there's much violence, because poverty drives every other thing that's out there. So poverty, corruption, violence, lack of opportunities.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, the list go on. I could just go on and on talking about the difficulties that we faced here in this country. And if you were from a line of poverty, then it just multiply the situation, you know. So people are desperate.
Yeah.
People are desperate, even within the country. You know, if they do not cross the border, they join trafficking people. Even within the country, you know, if they do not cross the border, then they join gang members, or they sell drugs, or you know, just anything to get beyond
subsistence where they've been,
where they're at. Yeah. So, those are the things that. You know, I think about when I think about the situation.
Are there any specific stories that you can share of people that you're aware of that we're trying to cross that might give like a really specific account of what that life is like?
Yeah, many, many. Actually, from our congregation, we've had many people who've gone. Some have passed, some returned, some returned and went back, and it just went on and on. And
and do they tell you stories of what that experience is like?
They do. Some of their stories are really good. I mean, like I said, there's a variety in everything. Some people has relatives in the States that could send them money. The relatives think like this. They say, while I'm here working, I'm having to send money home every month. But if I get that person up here, they can work for themselves.
Yeah.
And I won't have to send them any more money. So I need $5,000 to get them up here.
Yeah.
But we put the math to that once they're here. You know, I don't have to do that anymore if they're still there. Just say, okay, so they decide to pay, you know, if you pay more money, it seemed like they got, you know, levels of trafficking that you can go first class or you can go coach or whatever. Yeah. Those who have that facility, their stories are great. I mean, I've had many go from here and in a week they're writing back and say we're safe. We're with our relatives and, you know. Then those that cannot pay or can pay less, then they obviously have the stories of I've been raped, my daughter was raped, I've lost my hand, you know, to come back without a body member and so forth. But yeah, that's kind of the way that works.
If you could say something to the U.S. church about this, you know, as if we were going to, if the U.S. church were to say, we want to listen to our Honduran brothers and sisters. You know, what would be your statement to the U.S. church about the way that we should think about immigration? What would you want us to hear?
I would say what I sense the Lord say to me is value mercy about law. Mercy about law, not without law.
Yeah.
But
mercy above law.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's just, I think that was Jesus' teaching when they talk to him about breaking the law. You know, he put mercy up front. And wow. as church, you know, you said American church, as church folks, I think that that's the example that we should show to the world.
Yeah. Well, I think the church here, one of the things that's so neat is the different things you're doing to connect into the community, to bring hope, to bring life, mm-hmm. so that people don't feel that desperation.
Exactly.
And I think that is it's so encouraging to me to know that there are, you know, lampposts like you guys that are shining the hope of Christ in your communities and being a place of refuge and a place of safety, a true sanctuary, you know, a place where someone can escape to feel safe in their desperation. The last question I'm going to ask, and we try to ask this of as many people as we can, and the name of our podcast is A World of Good. So what good is God doing here in Honduras in your world?
Well, I'm excited about everything he's doing, but the entrepreneurship thing is that piece is very, very close to my heart. I like the fact of living here because I don't have to think very hard of, you know, what I need to do. Every day I wake up, it's right in front of me. You know, here's a million things you can do. There's a million good things act that I can do out there because there are so many needs there. So that's the wonderful thing of working here. And as you know, as a church, we're excited because every day there's new opportunities to do ministry in meaningful way. And I say this from having visited the States. One of the things I often ask myself when I'm there, what is there to do here, you know, as far as ministry, because everybody seems to have everything so under control, you know. I don't see no need. I don't see.
You just start a podcast. That's what people apparently are doing.
But yeah, the good is that you know, the opportunity is right in front of us.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. You know, one of the things I mentioned to the team yesterday as we were driving around visiting churches, and one of the things I love about you, Pastor Donnie, is that you have a vision for where you're going and your church. And again, it's from listening to the church. It's not your vision, it's the church's vision, but you have a vision for where you're going. But every time I'm here, that vision is tweaked just a little bit. You know, sometimes we get a vision in our mind that this is where we're going, and we do that without stopping, without reconsidering along the path. And yet I think someone who listens to the Spirit has a vision for where they're going, but knows that what that vision looks like now may not be what it looks like when you get there, because the community you're a part of may change. Mm-hmm. The people in their church may change.
Exactly.
The needs may change. And so we start walking that direction, mm-hmm. knowing that we may take little side roads here and there, mm-hmm. that actually help us get to a better place.
Exactly.
I just love that. I love getting here and seeing that a room that was used to teach kids, you know, last time is now being used as a dance studio, because that's what's needed right now in the midst of the people. Like, to me, that is such a beautiful example of truly listening to the Spirit and being willing to walk into whatever you're called to in that moment. So thanks for modeling that for me, and I think for the church in the United States to recognize that we have a vision, we know where we're going, and yet we're willing to change and adjust as we go along, as the Spirit leads.
Yeah, exactly. And I was sharing this with somebody, you know, that two of the words that we should kind of be careful with using is always or never.
Yeah,
you know, because that tend to box things in, and the Holy Spirit is like the wind. You know, you never know. I mean, He leads you to places that you didn't even thought you would go to. So we should always be open to that. And I sense that as a deep conviction within my life. You know, to not say always or never, but be there. Whatever you say, Lord, there I'm ready to go.
Thank you so much for sharing.
Thanks for listening to A World of Good.
Thank you.
A World of Good is a podcast production of Global Strategy and Church of God Ministries. Our theme song is Colorado by Leo Flores. If you want to join the conversation, visit us at Twitter at A World of Good Pod, on Instagram, A World of Good Podcast, or visit our website, chogglobal.org/A World of Good. And join us next time as we share more stories of good from around the world.